The BS Report is a free-flowing conversation that occasionally touches on mature subjects.
First of all,
this is the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
It might be cool, I don't know. And if it's not, I don't care.
The BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Bill Simmons works for ESPN. He's also named the sports guy, and he writes a comical sports column. He must be a popular dude.
The BS Report.
It's got a real dirty sound, like a rusty steak knife cutting through a well-aged steak.
Now.
Here's Bill Simmons.
Yeah. Welcome to the BS Report. Another sunny day in Los Angeles, the new home of Blake Griffin, unless the Clippers screw that up, which, you know what, they probably might. I'm not willing to rule it out. Who knows? But as always, every week during the baseball season, we're going to call my buddy Jacko, a lifelong Yankee fan. We're going to talk about Sox Yanks. This week has a little particular interest because the Yanks are red hot. They've won 7 straight, and I know Jacko is beside himself. Let's give him a call on the Subway Fresh Take hotline and see how he's feeling about the rejuvenated Yankees.
Complex Litigation, this is John.
Johnny.
What's up, buddy?
Oh, you're chipper today.
No, Johnny.
I knew you'd be in a good mood today.
I am in a good mood.
The Yanks have won a few in a row.
7 in a row will do that to me, absolutely.
Little juvenation.
We went through the juvenation machine. There's no question about that.
Couple walk-off wins.
3 in a row.
Little help from Mr. Ron Gardenhire.
How so?
I don't know.
Bringing in Joe Nathan? He's their closer.
I know. I'm looking for somebody to blame. I don't want the Yankees to be good again.
All right. You know who's responsible for it is none other than Alex A-Rod Rodriguez.
Really?
Oh, God, yeah. He's hit home run in 4 straight games. With him in the lineup, I mean, I guess you can magically point to it. It turned Teixeira around completely.
See, I would have said Tex was more responsible, but I guess you could say that maybe they were they pitching around him, maybe?
Well, I don't know. Or maybe they were being a little careful with him, and he was trying to do I mean, there was some theory the other night in the Yankees game that he was trying to do a little too much in A-Rod's absence. I mean,
yeah.
I don't know about that. It's not like football where a guy calls a play for himself and is trying to, like, take on the whole defense. I mean, in baseball, you're up there to hit the ball regardless of whether A-Rod's in the lineup or not. You're still supposed to hit. But it may help him to see some better pitches if, you know, they're worried about facing A-Rod, so they want to deal with him. He sees more fastballs. I don't know. Whatever it is, he's really turned it on, that's for sure.
Maybe mentally for the pitcher. It's just more stressful when A-Rod's in the... Well, obviously, it's more stressful, but, you know, you're approaching Tex and you think, if I can get this guy out, the rest of the lineup's cake. But
right.
Now you think, well, I have these two guys. Because before, it was like, all right, I have Derek Jeter's corpse up.
Come on.
Get him out.
Don't say that.
Well, Derek Jeter.
Not his corpse.
Let's see, 276, 354 on base, and a 417 slugging.
And 4 more home runs than Big Poppy.
Actually, 5.
5 more home runs than Big Poppy.
Yeah. The Big Poppy jokes aren't even funny anymore.
No, I beg to differ.
Nobody's enjoying this, not even the Yankee fans.
Oh, I beg to differ again. I'm enjoying it immensely.
You're enjoying
this? Last night I missed several minutes of the Yankees game. I was slipping between the Yankees and the Red Sox, but I wanted to watch Big Poppy's at-bats whenever possible. I caught his first one, and then thankfully I caught his last one, which was, it was almost sad, really. The last at-bat was almost sad, even for me.
What was the crowd reaction to the last one? Because I missed that point in the game.
Well, they gave him the standing O, or they showed a couple guys standing up anyway, and the crowd was cheering for him vociferously as he came up. And then after it was over, they were sort of like, they didn't really know what to do. It was kind of bemused, like, we want to root for him, we really don't want to boo him, but he's making it difficult. It was just more kind of like the stupidest thing I ever saw, and my wife will attest to this, my reaction, when he came up to the plate, some newborn pink hat Red Sox fan holds up a sign that says, Poppy needs a hug. We believe in you.
Oh,
I
no.
was like, oh, my God, how could you possibly root for this team? Of course, what I said, it had about 5 more expletives in it, but I was like, that's the most pathetic thing I've ever seen.
Well, maybe
Poppy
he does.
Needs a hug.
Maybe he does need a hug.
Maybe he does.
That's kind of the same sign you'd see at like a Jessica Simpson concert after she had a sleeping pill overdose.
Exactly right.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Or I like got to say, like, for the position the Red Sox are in right now, with all the pitching they have, they have just so much depth and so many possible moves they can make. And really, other than shortstop defense, and Yuka's getting hurt. He's coming back, but it's, the season's unfolded pretty well so far.
Well, the
Ortiz is just hanging over everything. It's unbelievable. It's just he dominates every Red Sox thought.
The thing is, though, I mean, despite they've gotten really mediocre starting pitching, and Big Poppy is not even a corpse. I mean, he's a ghost is what he is. He's nothing.
Yeah.
And they're still in second place and only like a game in the loss column out of first. So
they have the third best record in the American League.
Yeah, I mean, so given that, you got to like where they are, and they have, you know, 80 guys coming down the pike, be it Buchholz or Bowden or Smoltz or, you know, whoever else they have in their repertoire. So
Justin Tozawa, don't forget him.
What's his name? Bard now throwing 102 miles an hour or whatever. So,
yeah, Bard's looking like the closer in waiting.
They probably won't pay Papelbon whenever he's a free agent in a couple of years. They'll just send him on his way, out of town.
They have a couple of trades to make, and that's what's going to be really interesting because at some point they're going to have to address the fact that their DH has a below 600 OPS. You basically have an eight batter lineup. It's like having the secretary in the softball game.
Well, you have to
have the extra girl, and the secretary agrees.
Their lineup last night, not just Big Poppy, but then went without Euclid in it because of injury, and they have like Jeff Bailey and George Cotteris.
Yeah.
And whoever was playing short last night, was it Lugo last night?
It doesn't matter.
It's not. be it Nick Green or Lowry or Lugo. It's not really a murderer's row of 7, 8, 9.
No, and when you have the $160 million payroll or whatever they have, you don't want to have the hole in DH.
Yeah.
I have Victor Martinez on my fantasy team this year in my League of Dorks.
Right.
And he has been hitting the crap out of the ball. And also, as we've discussed before, is one of the all-time great teammates.
Yeah,
has the handshake for every guy in the team. He can catch. He can play DH, like play a little first base. Like he's kind of exactly what they need.
That's what I'm going to hold my hat on because I'm sure the commissioner will step in and somehow they'll get Victor Martinez for like Julio Lugo and 5 single A players that no one's ever heard of. We'll ever hear from again. So I'm sure they'll get Victor Martinez. So what I'm going to hang my hat on is that he's not only going to have to change cities and learn a whole new pitching staff, but he also has the pressure of coming up with handshakes for 24 more guys.
Do you think he reuses them, or is it 25? He has to start from scratch with 25 new ones.
Well, it'd be easier if they still had like Julian Tavares and Manny, because he could break out some of those from when they were on the Indians, you know, the Cleveland handshakes. But
yeah.
But now I think he's got to break out something new. I think if he gets traded and then they play Cleveland and a guy in Cleveland is like, hey, that's my handshake. How dare you do it with Euclid now?
I saw what you did. I saw what you did with Julio Lugo.
I had the 2 fist pumps explode the hand and do the back high five. That was mine.
Well, they have a lot of different options because they can obviously just give Cleveland the Godfather offer. And I do think that makes sense for Cleveland because they're not going anywhere.
Right.
And, you know, they can build around Sizemore and their young guys. And then the Red Sox can, even if they have to give up both pitchers, I don't think they would. But, you know, you're going to have to.
Bowden.
Well, you have to overpay to get somebody like Martinez. He's one of the best hitters in the league, and he's a great guy, and he fits in with what they're trying to do, and he's actually cheap, too.
Yeah,
he makes like $7 million next year.
Yeah.
Or they go the other direction and, you know, like somebody like Brad Penny.
Yeah.
Brad Penny, anybody?
I keep reading that he's just being showcased for trade bait. And I'm like,
yeah.
Really? Trade bait? For what?
I think they're trying to sell him as the rich man Sidney Ponzone.
Really?
That's their brochure that they hand out to the other teams.
High praise.
Or even the much wealthier man Sidney Ponzone. They can't trade Wake, obviously. He's an institution. He'll retire with the team. Awesome guy in the clubhouse. Does a lot of charity stuff, so he can't go. It would seem that Penny would be the likely guy. I don't think they could trade Dice either because of all their Japanese...
Yeah,
business
they
ties. They can't trade Beckett, obviously.
No. And they can't trade Lester.
They can't trade Lester, the cancer survivor. So, really, Brad Penny, I hope he's renting.
I just don't think you're going to get that much for Brad Penny. I mean, I just don't, you know, maybe they would throw him in because they need the space in the rotation. If they made some Martinez trade, he'd be like a throw-in and they'd eat his salary like they did with Manny. But
well, I think if you're going to trade Brad Penny, you're getting an expensive hitter back who's good but overpriced. Like, for instance, like say Hank Blalock wasn't terrible.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say he was hitting .296 instead of .236 and Texas needed to open up a roster spot to bring up Justin Smoke. That's the kind of trade I could see them making. I don't know who that person is, but you know, you maybe you turn him into the $9 million outfielder who's really worth $4
million. I just don't know how, if you're a GM in some city, you sell your fan base on Brad Penny. It's like a big move for your team to make. I just, you know, I just don't see it.
He dated, who did he date?
You're not going to get Alyssa Milano in the stands anymore.
Dated Alyssa Milano?
Yeah, I think they broke up, though.
Didn't he date, I thought he dated Elijah Dushku.
Maybe.
I think he did. And which weirder is that she's a Red Sox fan. Imagine rooting your ex-boyfriend on. Although she's a little dubious. Like, I think Aubrey O'Day is actually a real Celtic fan.
Really?
Yeah, you go on her Twitter page and it's covered in Celtics logos.
Oh, there you go.
And then she actually like has tweets during the games and stuff. Dushku to me seems like she might not know who's on the team.
What about like what's her name? Alicia Cuthbert or whatever? She's a big hockey fan, right? She dates a good portion of the NHL. Or did?
Yeah, that's, I think
I don't want to get into a Sean Avery situation here, but I mean that was the Sean Avery thing, right?
I love the NHL where Sean Avery gets suspended indefinitely for the sloppy seconds comment, and yet Scott Walker just punches Aaron Ward right in the face, who doesn't have his hands up, isn't looking, and gets to play in the next game.
Well, it's because
kind of league is this?
Well, it's like the column you wrote yesterday, but it's different in the playoffs. Avery was in the regular season, and Walker was in the playoffs, so it's different standard in the playoffs.
But since when did insulting somebody's mentioning that your ex-girlfriend dates somebody else in the league, since when is that like some sort of deal breaker for the NHL?
Well, part of it is because it's Sean Avery too. Well, I don't understand why he was suspended. They should have just let it be settled on the ice. I mean, they were playing the Calgary Flames, and I forget who it was on the Flames.
Yeah, that was Dion LeFouf or something. I forget.
No,
his
that's
name.
It. What's his name? Fanouf. Yeah,
Fanouf. Dion
Fanouf. He's kind of a thug, I think.
Yeah, he would have settled business the old-fashioned way.
Yeah, I think that's what the NHL was afraid of, that like Sean Avery would have been wheeled off on a stretcher with his head taped down. They really didn't want that I was going to say for marketing purposes, but the NHL has no marketing, so what do they care?
Well, what's weird is the way everybody reacted to it. Like, I feel like if there had been no overreaction by the NHL, the story would have just immediately died. We hear worse stuff every day.
More people learned about what he said about her because of the suspension than ever would have heard about it if it just was allowed to just go away.
Yeah, it was like a classic case of you made a mountain out of a molehill, and now it's a much bigger story that's much more embarrassing for the league than what had happened originally.
Part of it is because it was Sean Avery, too, I think, and everybody just hates him.
Yeah, they were looking for some sort of excuse to turn on him.
Right, and that was he gave it to him.
Yeah.
I never got to hook up with him when he was here, not literally, but I mean go out in the town with him when he was here in Hartford. He was on the Hartford Wolfpack when he made his comeback.
Oh, he was?
Yeah, for like about a month. I was hoping to bump into him in a bar or something, but it never materialized.
There's only three.
I know.
One in three chance. Maybe you would have seen him at a hot dog truck.
It wouldn't have been hard to find him. I know. Disappointing.
Have you been watching any of the hockey playoffs?
Yeah, I watched all of I watched half of the third period of the Bruins Hurricanes, and I watched all of overtime.
Mm.
And I tuned into a little bit of Pittsburgh, Carolina the other night in the first period. I watched some of that.
You know, the Wings are up 2-0.
Yeah, I hate the Red Wings.
Yeah, I was hoping that series would be better. Maybe the Blackhawks will come back in the two Chicago games. But
I had high hopes for that there. Because they have the coolest jerseys in sports.
Well, it's an amazing story. They're an original six franchise, and they're basically dead 2 years ago. And there was this like mildly amazing Forbes article about how they've turned it around in 2 years. Like now they have like a 4,000 person ticket waiting list and
really?
Stuff. Yeah. And what it came down to was that some dude took over. I'm going to Google this while I'm talking to you. Some guy took over and kind of modernized the team.
Oh, really?
But he modernized it in a way that, you know, it was like very basic stuff. Like they hired a receptionist.
They
that.
Got electricity in the locker room. Or it's amazing they almost died 2 years ago, or however many years ago you said, because you would think Chicago would be a good hockey town. It's cold, it's gritty, blue collar, you know, like Detroit, original six.
But I don't think you can overstate how many fans the NHL turned off with all the stuff that happened, you know?
Well, that's true.
And it was like when you're asking people to pay just too much money for tickets, and you have a lockout, and you have all these bad things happening with the league. I think people were just like, hey, good luck, guys.
Yeah, I guess so. I actually remember reading a thing about the start of the NHL season, and they had like the players walk in on a red carpet into the arena or something, the Blackhawks. I think it might have been I watched some, I think it was on January 1st when they played at Wrigley Field against the Red Wings, the outdoor classic or whatever they call it in the NHL.
Oh, yeah. Watched, a very good idea.
I watched some of that, and I think they were talking about the Blackhawks and how they had, you know, a big opening night on the red carpet, and the players walked out, and people were really into it. Maybe it was in Sports Illustrated I read it, but I read it. I either read it or saw it someplace.
I'm interested to see what happens with hockey. I wrote about it this week, but, you know, I really feel like the last two fixes to get to where it needs to go are really easy. Like, they just need to cut out 4 or 6 teams, get the more rivalries, feuds thing going, and then they, you know, I think they make a lot of sense for ESPN, and ESPN makes a lot of sense for the NHL, you know.
When I capitalize on my podcast fame and fortune to bring back the Hartford Whalers as the owner, as the Steinbrenner-esque owner of the new Hartford Whalers, I'm going to capitalize on some of that guy's ideas to make the Whalers young and exciting again.
It's a hire a receptionist?
I'm going to hire a receptionist. That's right. It's the first, write that down, first order of business, hire a receptionist. Right.
Johnny, the other night I was watching the Yankee Stadium. Let's go back to the Yankees.
Yeah.
I was watching the Yankee game, and I started posting some tweets making fun of how quiet it was.
Yeah, you called
me. Deathly quiet it was. Then I finally called you and taunted you.
Right.
It's unbelievable.
I didn't think it was that bad.
You're
pretty
denial.
Good crowds now. If you watch over the weekend, I was watching their games over the weekend, and they were pretty lively, the crowd. The crowd's into this team now. They've won 7 in a row, the pie in the face thing. The team has some camaraderie.
I said that my thing is that I think they should change the nickname of Yankee Stadium from the house that Ruth built to Augusta. Because 99% of the time it's dead quiet, and then there's some polite applause every once in a while.
No, there was a crowd. If you watched over the weekend when they had the walk-offs, the crowd was into it. It was pretty lovely.
Oh, congratulations. Your crowd got excited for a walk-off home run.
Come on. I mean, the crowd was into it the whole game. They've been into it for A-Rod's home runs. I've heard cheering on TV.
It's not the same, Johnny.
I can't really judge until I go there. When I go there, I can come back and give you a full report, but I can't judge based on TV.
You can't judge.
Midweek game against the Twins. You're watching a Monday night game against the Twins. You know.
Okay.
And it's not going to be, the crowd's not going to be that into it. It's chilly. Chilly back east on Monday.
Any more excuses, or are you almost done?
No, I'm good for now, I think. That's about it.
What about the part where there's just empty seats behind every batter on the left and right side of the plate?
Yeah, that's a problem. I'm not going to lie to you. They overpriced those seats, and they should lower them still yet again. Yeah,
I like tell your idea about the seat fillers.
Well, I said one of two things. Either they should go out and just hire people to be seat fillers, like they could just stand back in the aisles.
Like
the Oscars, and then move into the seats as they see that they're empty.
Yeah.
Or they should have the concession people, like once they have to stop selling beer, all the concessionaires can just move down to those seats and sit there and applaud.
But
they have to stop selling beer in like the 6th or 7th inning. So.
But don't they have a good idea before the game who's going to show up and who's not going to show up? That's what I don't get. Like, are people paying for these tickets and just not using them?
Oh,
or
yeah,
are they available?
Those are all season tickets. Those are all season tickets. So it's just that people aren't there.
Yeah, so they're not there, but I mean, what was the difference between this year and last year? If season tickets, the people aren't there, why weren't they empty last year?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, I heard somewhere that they had like 100, I think they had like 104 or 100, I forget what the number now, 124, I think, of the super high-priced $2,500 seats, and they had sold season tickets for like 84 of them. So theoretically, that's only like 40 seats that should be empty.
Right.
But it's much more than that. I think it's just, I mean, they probably sold them to corporations or corporate entities, and they don't want to use them either for PR purposes, or they can't give them away, or, you know, their people aren't available that night.
There's no way they couldn't give them away in New York.
Yeah,
people are going to go sit in those seats. See, I feel like they probably only sold like 80 of the 250. I've heard that that you can just go up to the box office at Yankee Stadium and buy two of those seats.
Two of the $2,500 ones?
Yeah, just slap your credit card down and you're in for $5,000.
Yeah, maybe.
It would seem to me like it would make sense, like even if they use Twitter, and they put out, like, kind of like what Amazon does on Twitter with the gold box deals.
Yeah.
If they went on Twitter and they said, you know, they just posted like, hey, we have 40 of those $2,500 seats today. You have 45 minutes to buy them, and we're selling them for 33% of what they cost. So $800 a ticket, buy them now and you're in. Like, why aren't they doing stuff like that?
Well, they're probably not that up to date in terms of, you know, technology. And
they're a sports team.
Networking. I'm not.
This is why this goes back to my whole thing about why I should, you know why it's not a completely atrocious idea that I would be a GM, because I would think about this stuff.
This is a
sports team that is in charge. It's a corporation in charge of making money any way they can, and they just let these seats die every game for no reason.
No, I'm not defending them. I agree with you. You're right, but you know,
I'm not mad at you, Johnny. I'm just mad.
Got me a little afraid there. I'm under my desk right now. You're screaming at me.
It's like how I mean. Twitter's been around for a year.
I don't run the Yankees. Stop yelling at me.
But like the Amazon Gold Box, they had a thing yesterday. It was like Miami Vice, the entire complete collection, $70 off our sale price. I almost bought it.
Wow.
And I would never watch the Miami Vice, but just out of principle that Sonny and Ricardo were on sale like that, I was like, oh man, I got to give these guys
a home. Help them out.
But you would think like if they just created a Twitter account called Yankees Tickets or something like that, and then they just put up these deals.
They're probably worried about they'd have a backlash from people that are like, hey, I paid $2,500 and now you're selling them for $800. Keith Olbermann was whining because they had some deal where they cut the prices, and if you had $800 seats, you got a free one. So if you had two, now you have three, or you have four, now you have five. And he was complaining about that he was all fired up that he got a free, that he got an extra seat, and not that they didn't cut the prices.
So, Keith Olbermann has $800 season tickets?
Yeah, I was reading about it online.
He can't even drive.
Well,
he doesn't drive a car. How does he get there?
He lives in New York. He takes a taxi or a subway or a limo.
I might have to get him on the BS report.
Oh, good.
Not a fan?
Not even a little bit.
Not even a smidge?
Not even an iota.
Might be skipping that one?
I might not tune into that one. I might delete that one from my iPod.
So what do you think the Yankees have for moves?
Well, I hope they have some moves that somehow bolsters their bullpen, because even during this run, the bullpen causes me a near coronary on a regular basis.
I saw they sent down our old friend Eduardo Ramirez.
They did, and they wanted to send down Jose Veras, but Jose Veras is unfortunately out of options, and they were afraid that he'd be picked up off of waivers. I frankly didn't have the same fear. I was hopeful. But they seem to think that he's salvageable, so they had to send down Eduardo Ramirez, who was also a good candidate to go down. But,
yeah.
You know, they got Bruni back last night.
Oh, that'll turn it.
Well, he's been good for them in the eighth inning. And they have Brett Tomko.
Oh, my Lord.
I can't even say that with a straight face. But he's been actually decent for them. He was thrown at 93, 94 the other night. So he's not awful, and he brings a little veteran presence down there.
I have Bruni on my fantasy team, and I have to say he's not terrible.
No.
But I don't think he should be your lead setup guy. If he's your lead setup guy, you've done something wrong. I think he could be like maybe your third best reliever.
Sadly, he is our lead. He is the eighth inning guy. It's between he and Phil Koch, who is the lefty specialist. Now, the lefty specialist gave up a tape measure home run to Justin Morneau on Sunday, but on Monday they brought him in, and he got Morneau on three pitches and made him look ridiculous. So he learned the lesson of Sunday, obviously, but then he was so shaky in the ninth inning, he gave up a run and damn near killed me in the process of getting his first ever major league save. So he's allegedly the lefty specialist, but he only specializes in making me nervous.
Maybe Berman turned his season around when he called them Phil, Captain Morgan, and Coke on Monday night.
That may have been the factor.
That could have been the turning point for him.
Yeah, he was forcing me to drink a couple of Captain and Cokes in the ninth inning.
Imagine if Berman had gone with, Phil, I've snorted 40 lines of Coke. Or Phil, get me some Coke.
Yeah, Captain and Coke is probably the way to go there.
Yeah, Phil, Captain and Coke. That's a solid nickname.
It was actually blacked out on ESPN for me because I was watching, because I get the Yes Network, so
yeah.
I was watching it on the Yes Network.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. I never understood the whole blackout thing.
Speaking of great calls, though, I mentioned to you how the other day I was driving home on Saturday afternoon, and I was listening to the Yankees game on the radio, and the immortal John Sterling does the broadcast for the Yankees on the radio, and I had never heard him do it to share a home run call before. And Teixeira hit a three-run home run to give the Yankees the lead.
Yeah.
And so he hits it, and Sterling does the, it is high, it is far, it is gone, which is, he does for everybody.
Yeah.
But then he has, like, these things for individual players. Like, when Jeter hits one, he goes, El Capitan. And when Robinson Cano hits it, he goes, Robbie Cano, don't you know? and Posada, he goes, Georgie juiced one.
That's probably a bad choice.
Yeah, it really is, given the
climate,
yeah, not a good idea. But anyway, so for Teixeira, he goes, it is high, it is far, it is gone. And then he goes, a text message to write. And then if that wasn't enough, then to be even more over the top, he goes, "You're on the mark, Teixeira."
No.
It was fantastic. He did all this. It is high and as far as it's gone. A text message to write, "You're on the mark, Teixeira." It was great. I was so happy. I was applauding in my parking space.
You think he scripts it? You think he goes to like a Starbucks and scripts those out?
Oh, undoubtedly. He definitely writes them. I think he practices them in front of a mirror, even though he's on the radio.
He's like, "On the mark." Nah, too easy.
I was thinking this. He was like, should I go with "You hit your mark, Teixeira," or should I go with "You're on the mark, Teixeira"? You know, a lot you can work with there. It was great.
So who do you think takes the AL if you had to bet on anybody?
Well, I've done a complete 180. I'm feeling good about the Yanks. I'm not
going
to lie.
Oh, my Lord. What are you feeling? Give me a scale of 1 to 10. How worried are you?
Right now, right this minute, I'm like a 3.
Wow.
I'm feeling pretty good about the Yanks. But wait, I think we've moved on beyond the Big Poppy thing way too quickly. I want to talk about that some more. And the thing that I've given this a lot of thought because it gives me so much pleasure to see the great Red Sox superstar and the decline. Not even decline. I mean the canyon, the cataclysm that his career has become.
Yeah.
And then what kills me is I read a lot of things about the Red Sox, the Boston papers and online and message boards and Red Sox blogs because I'm obsessed with them because I hate them so much now.
Yeah.
And the people on there, the level of denial about even mentioning the word steroids in association with his decline, to even speculate about it, is just mesmerizing to me.
You have no proof, Johnny.
And the only analogy I can draw to it, and I've given this some thought, is when I think about like people watching TV in the 70s, and they see Liberace on TV, and they're like, "That Liberace's quite an entertainer. When's he going to get married?" It's the same level of denial. "That Paul Lynde on Hollywood Squares, he's so funny. I never heard anything about his wife. Interesting." It's the same level of something that is staring you in the face as blatantly obvious and the willful forced denial to even question that steroids were involved in his career and its subsequent decline is mesmerizing and fascinating to me.
There's no proof. You have no proof. You have zero proof. Other than a coincidental drop in production right around the time they started testing, no proof.
Right. There's no proof that O.J. Simpson killed his wife either, but there seems to be there's no video of it. There's no video of him actually doing it, just like there's no video of Big Papi using steroids, but there's an overwhelming amount of circumstantial evidence that I can put together to build a case. Let's put it that way.
Well, you'd have no case because you'd have no evidence.
I have some statistical evidence that I could use to put some charts
together. That's it. It's coincidental. Jim Rice, how does that explain how Jim Rice stopped hitting in 1988?
Well, that's
the same evidence.
Yeah, it's a different – Jim Rice played in a different era.
No, he didn't. The Steelers were all – they all used steroids in the late 70s.
Maybe you can make a case for Jim Rice then too.
Hey, don't bring Jim Rice into this. How dare you?
You just brought Jim Rice into it. Yeah, the Shaughnessy wrote a whole article today about the decline of Big Poppy. Now that the Celtics and Bruins are done and he's gotten back on the Red Sox bandwagon, he just discovered, like, he thought that was the first time anyone has ever written about it in the past 3 weeks. He did a big article, and the word steroids was never used once in the article, which I found fascinating.
Oh, I live in a world where everybody is innocent until proven guilty, Johnny.
that is the standard of the American judicial system, I will give you that. But in the court of public opinion, I'm entitled to a different standard of proof.
I think the fact that he has no home runs is amazing.
Zero.
Like somebody said to me that Nick Swisher's ERA is the same number as Big Poppy's home run total this year.
That's
the worst graphic yet to bang that point home. I just think it's sad and it makes me unhappy. That's where I'm at. That's where I'm at right now, Johnny.
I mean, I can't believe they haven't dropped him in the lineup yet. I know Francona is notoriously loyal to veteran players.
Yeah.
But, I mean, at this point, the guy, you're embarrassing him. He's embarrassing himself. That game last night, that last at-bat, that was one of the worst at-bats I've ever seen.
Yeah, we've talked about this. Francona is famous for sticking with his players. He's famous for it. But at some point, you're giving away wins because of where this guy is batting, respective to everyone else in the lineup. Like, you have this guy who cannot hit the ball out of the infield, batting in between all your other best guys.
Yeah.
It makes no sense. He has to be batting 7th or 8th.
Because Ellsbury and Pedroia are going to get on base, and then he comes up and he's just a black hole. I mean, double plays, strikeouts, he just does pop-ups, he does nothing for you.
He's reached the final stage for me, which you rarely see in baseball, where the guy comes up with a guy in first base and you root for him to strike out over hitting the double play.
Yes.
He strikes out, you're relieved.
It's only one out instead of two.
It's the final stage of turning on a hitter.
Yes.
And that's depressing to me.
Yeah, I can imagine as a Red Sox fan it would be. I'm gleeful about it. I'm not going to lie to you. I've enjoyed every minute of it.
I would argue that you're in similar denial with Jeter. That guy is a freaking mummy at shortstop. I think you have a better chance of turning a double play at this point than he does.
This Red Sox propaganda of bashing Jeter is just an outrage. He's hitting 276. He's in the middle of every rally. He's been great this year. Is he defensively what he was when he was in his 20s? No, he's not, obviously. His range leaves a little something to be desired, and eventually he's going to have to move away from shortstop. Everyone understands that.
He's more stiff than Luca Brasi.
Come on.
It looks like they dipped him in cement.
To compare, to even talk about A-Rod, I mean, to talk about Big Papi and Jeter in the same breath is an outrage. I mean, it's just laughable. People are laughing at you right now.
I'm not saying the reasons are the same. I'm just saying that you have a washed-up shortstop who's the worst defensive shortstop in the league.
I didn't mean to suggest that you were alleging steroids with Jeter. I'm just saying to talk about there's levels of being washed up, and so to talk about the two of them in the same breath as being somehow equivalent on the washed-up scale is ridiculous.
Jeter's a 270 hitter who's going to hit maybe 15 homers this year and steal 8 bags and give you D-minus defense. That's what you're getting from Derek Jeter for $20 million a year.
He's been solid this whole year. The Yankees have a surprisingly good defense. If you look at their numbers, they've committed very few errors. It's not like he's given up extra outs on balls he should get to.
Oh, please. He doesn't commit errors because he can't get to any ground balls.
Oh, my God. Your shortstop is Nick Green, and you're hoping for Julio Lugo and Jed Lowry.
I'm fine with that.
Nick Green single-handedly lost a game the other day in Seattle.
I admit that our shortstops stink. I think you should do the same.
Chuck Knobloch was watching the game saying that was a bad throw.
Listen, it's time you came to grips with what's happening to the captain.
It's like a Jeter intervention.
Yeah, I mean, he's just not good anymore. He's not a good baseball player
anymore.
He's an average baseball player.
He's a good player. He's also going to be the first Yankees hitter to ever have 3,000 hits.
Good. I'm not arguing that he didn't have a great career. I'm just saying he's at a different phase of his career.
I'm not saying he's what he was. He's not. But I think he's still a good player.
Under what criteria do you have to make that analysis?
He's solid. He's a solid shortstop. He's hitting 276.
Who says he's a solid shortstop?
I did.
Of course you did.
I think he's fine. I don't want another shortstop.
You don't want another shortstop?
No, it's Derek Jeter. He can stay there till he wants to go. He's not the hole in the lineup that Big Papi or Veritek are.
He's
not even close.
I'm looking at a...
He's in the middle of every rally. He's always on base late in games when it counts.
According to ESPN.com, his range factor is 4.31 this year for American League shortstops. That ranks him a solid 10.
There you go. So there's four that are worse.
Now there's three that are worse, actually. Orlando Cabrera, Betancourt, who's just a train wreck, and Jason Bartlett, who should be playing second base and is playing shortstop out of necessity of the team. That's pretty bad, Johnny.
So you wouldn't, right now, let's settle this right now, you would not take Derek Jeter over Lugo, Nick Green, or Lowry?
Oh, I absolutely would.
Well, there you go.
How bad can he be? But Lowry
he's better than any three of the shortstops on your roster, and you're going to kill
him.
Wait
a second. Lowry just had wrist surgery. He can't play, so Jeter's better than him.
Let's say he was completely healthy. You would take Lowry over Jeter?
Nick Green should be in Japan, and Julio Lugo is terrible.
Right. But if Lowry was healthy, you would take Lowry over Jeter?
No.
He's
not healthy, though. You're asking me a question that can't be proven.
I'm asking you a hypothetical question. What if he was completely healthy?
Would I rather have Jed Lowry for $1 million than Derek Jeter for 20?
Yes. Now you're talking about salary.
That's part of it.
Oh, my God. This is the obfuscation to get away from the Big Papi story of trying to drag the great Derek Jeter through the mud is just an outrage.
Derek Jeter, 276, 354 on base, 417 slugging. He has 12 extra base hits in 37 games.
There you go. One every three games.
22 strikeouts. He's got 8 steals. That's pretty good.
8 steals right now. You just claimed he was going to have 8 steals all year.
Yeah, I didn't realize the steals were that high. He's 8 for 9 with steals.
He's on pace for over 30 steals. He's also going to score 200 runs.
Well, he's on pace for less than 100 now, so you might want to recant that one.
Maybe. He's going to score a lot of runs, put it that way.
I think I want to start calling you the captain.
Can you call me El Capitan?
Well, the captain is really, it's a term reserved for guys who are the captain of a team but haven't been good in like 4 years. Veritek and Derek Jeter, the captain. You're kind of, you turned 39 this year. You're kind of washed up.
I am.
You're washed up as a stickball player.
Pretty much, yeah. My wiffle ball career is not what it used to be.
You're the captain. El Capitan. You know, we made a little bit of...
I would call you Big Poppy, but I don't want to be that offensive.
You know, we made some headway last week with Steven Strasburg.
Steven Strasburg, the anchorman?
Steven Strasburg, yeah, and the anchorman.
I got some blowback from friends of mine, and they don't like the. They disagreed with me about the anchorman. They think it should just be anchorman.
Somebody else was really pushing the chief of staff in an email.
That's not bad.
And then somebody else was saying the whip.
Like the majority or minority whip. Yeah, that's not bad.
Yeah, the whip. Pretty good.
But you have a stat that's whip, you know? Walks and hits for innings.
That was my problem with it.
Yeah.
I still like the anchorman. I think it's like the edge.
Yeah.
How the edge just refused to ever be called edge.
Right, he's the edge.
He's the edge. It's part of his name. He's the edge.
Right.
When I was just a killer.
You used to talk about going to dinner with the edge, and you would say, "Could you please pass the salt, the edge?"
Yeah. Well, I always enjoyed that. He was such a stickler about it.
Right.
We used to like when Bono, like the documentaries about them, Bono would say, "Hey, what do you think of the lyrics, the edge?"
Yeah.
Yeah, we got to, you know what would be, next time we're in the same room, I think I want to do a couple podcasts where I watch a movie or a documentary or whatever with a friend. We just have our headphones on and people could watch the same thing.
That's good.
I want us to do thing. I want us to do Rattle and Hum.
Oh, fantastic.
Rattle and Hum, I think, just has endless, just gobs of comedy. It's just, it oozes funniness the entire time. It's never not funny.
Do you like the lyrics, BB?
What about when they go to Graceland?
Yeah, and Larry Mullen Jr. wants to sit on the motorcycle and they have to sweet talk the security guard.
Oh, it's great. Bono's hair is fantastic. Like, he's never had crazier, better hair.
Yeah.
And the edge was right at that stage where he was like, do I go with the bandana? Like, do I not? What do I do? And the other two guys, I don't think, say anything for 2 hours.
Very limited. I don't think Larry Mullen Jr. speaks.
He's like Rajon Rondo.
He speaks at Graceland. He liked the part that... He talks about how when Elvis was in the movies, he always liked Elvis because he wasn't just a musician. He was like a musician that drove a truck, and he was like a musician that worked in a restaurant. Like, that was the premise of every Elvis movie.
Yeah.
Larry Mullen Jr. enjoyed that part.
Larry Mullen thought those weren't real movies, that those are actually documentaries about
Elvis's life. To the top. I have my tickets to go see them at Gillette Stadium in September.
You know, it's been 30 years for them.
I know, and they're still kicking.
Yeah, but I don't think anyone thinks they're cool under, like, age 30.
No, undoubtedly.
There's, like, what scares me is that I think people think of them the same way we thought of the Rolling Stones in college.
Probably.
Like, fun event to go to, but you wouldn't exactly, like, put the Rolling Stones poster up in your college dorm in 1991.
No, that's sad. That's
yeah, it
true.
is a little bit of a bummer. Good luck with the next generation of music, everybody.
Yeah.
Of these bands that make one album and then they stink.
Exactly.
All right, Johnny, so... You're feeling good about the Yanks.
I do.
And you have, let's see what the schedule is coming up here.
I can tell you they play, they have two more games against Baltimore tonight and tomorrow, and then they play Philadelphia this weekend, the world champs.
Oh, and then you got three at Texas,
and then
three
they go
at Cleveland.
Texas, the little
four
scrappy
at Cleveland.
Texas team, and then at Cleveland.
Do you think more of me now that after I made the big case for Texas and bet them a 10-1 odds and touted their virtues as a sleeper and all that stuff, and they're running away with the AL West?
That's pretty good. It's a good deal.
That's all I get?
Yeah, it was good. I mean, you know, you've made a lot of predictions over the years that haven't quite worked out. So,
oh, how dare you.
You know, blind squirrel finds a nut every now and again. So Hey, how fired up are you for the Blake Griffin era out in L.A.? Do you want to recant everything you've written about Mike Dunleavy and his brilliant strategy to get the number one pick paid off?
No. I was talking to our friend House last night, and I was saying it's the similarities between the Clippers getting the number one pick and the GM bailout are just overwhelming. Just complete incompetence leading to somebody else stepping in and basically giving them a reset button.
Clean bill of health, yeah. You know what I was waiting for was the Stern. If Stern really ran the league like he used to, Oklahoma City would have gotten that one. Just because it's his buddy and they orchestrated their escape from Seattle, he would have given them the number one pick, too. Just a little icing on the cake.
Then the Knicks would have gotten one of the top three, too, I think.
And you know what was sad? I forgot that the lottery was on, and then you sent me an email that you were Twittering it. So I was like, ooh, I have to watch the lottery. My wife was like, what is this? What are they doing? What are they sitting there? What are those cards? She was like, ooh, they got the number one pick. That's exciting. Like, she didn't realize. I was kind of into the lottery. Yeah. Although the lottery used to be a lot more exciting when everybody had an equal chance.
Yes.
This weighting of the ping pong balls really sucked all the life out of it.
Hate it.
But the most troubling thing about the lottery was basketball. Jesus. LB. Not aging well, huh?
Yeah.
HD was not kind to LB.
I'm going to decline comment, Johnny.
What?
I'm going to decline comment on the legend.
I know. You don't want to blaspheme, I understand. But it was sad to see.
I didn't like the hair color or the outfit.
Yeah. And his hair was like, I don't know. Not just the color, but it almost looked like a wig.
Yeah, it kind of did
I'm
look
worried about
wig,
being struck by lightning.
Yeah,
right
I'd
now,
be but... careful, Johnny. Treading into some dangerous ground here.
Sarah's going to, like, pull a hammy tonight or something, blow out an ACL.
I'd be very careful.
I'm sorry.
We see the same thing with the Nationals, that they luck into Strasburg because they're the most incompetent. I covered this with Gladwell.
I know. I read that.
And I've been thinking about it ever since, that this is really just wrong. This is wrong that it operates this way. You shouldn't – the worst, most incompetent franchise should not be rewarded with the best possible rookie.
Well, his idea of doing away with the draft completely, like, blew my mind when I tried to think of the repercussions of that, like how it would work. And, I mean, that would just be a bit free-for-all, but it would be really exciting.
Well, you know, it's interesting. My main boss, John Skipper, emailed me about this. This is how the English Premier League works.
Oh, really?
They don't have a draft. Yeah. You bid for prospects.
Don't they always have the same teams being good, though?
Well, that's what it leads to. But really, how is that different than baseball?
Well, it's a good point. Or football, for that matter. I mean, or basketball. I mean, those teams are like the Clippers and the Knicks of late. Those teams are perpetually in the lottery. So it's not like the draft is doing any good.
It's just such a bad scenario for Blake Griffin. Like, you know, he goes to this Clippers team. He gets to be in this front court where the two other spots are hogged by three other guys already. He gets to play with Zach Randolph, who's just a bozo.
Right.
And, you know, not for like four more years will he kind of begin to be who he is. And you look at, like, if everybody had equal odds, like say he went to Phoenix.
Mm-hmm.
That's a nice situation for him, you know?
Yeah, they're not that far away from being a playoff team.
Yeah, or even if he'd gone to, I don't know, like even, I'm trying to think, like New Jersey, he gets to play with Brook Lopez, like whatever. But I just hate, like, Memphis, they're just awful. They're the worst franchise in the league. They shouldn't have a team. Like, they don't spend money. They have no fans, and they get the number two pick.
Right.
And why are we helping this team out? We should be trying to weed them out.
Yeah, you're right. And your thing with Gladwell, I mean, that was interesting. It's a good point about why do we reward teams that are awful.
Like, who has done a worse job than the Nationals in baseball the last 3 years?
Nobody.
But they went from, like, having this new opportunity in a new stadium, and everybody in Washington was ready to support them. And within 2 years, everybody was out, and everybody was like, all right, go away. And now they get Strasburg, who's the best pitching prospect, you know, since Mark Pryor.
But if he didn't have that, I guess if he didn't have a draft in baseball, then the Yankees would just go and pay. And when you have no salary cap, the Yankees would just go and give him $120 million. The Red Sox would try and give him $100 million, and the Yankees would outbid and go to 110 or 120, and then he'd be on the Yankees. And then everybody would riot and, like, tear down stadiums.
It would basically be like what happened with the Dice K bidding.
Yeah, exactly. But they'd be doing that for every single player.
I think if it happened that way, I think it should work like eBay, where you could watch the bidding as it goes along.
That would be exciting.
Yankees have the high bid of $52 billion, 30 minutes to go.
In basketball and football, at least there's a salary cap, so teams would either have to cut – known guys if there was some rookie that they were hot for.
Yeah.
Or they would have to, you know, there'd be the Giants and the Jets couldn't go out and get everybody, you know, every single player that they wanted out of college.
I like the way I think for the most part basketball has it right. I do think there should be a draft. And I think maybe they have too many teams. Like, I would just get rid of Memphis and I'd get rid of one other team.
I forget if it was your idea or Gladwell's, but the one about having every team in the lottery, now that's exciting.
Yeah. Oh, every team. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, then you really might have like some sort of super team.
But at the very least, what they should do is they should go back to the old way where it's not weighted with ping pong balls.
Right.
Where everybody has all 14 teams that don't make the playoffs have an even shot. That was much more exciting.
Yeah. It solves a lot of problems too, because then you can't tank. Then your fans aren't just getting screwed out of a month of season tickets in March and April.
Why did they change it? Because Orlando got it back-to-back? And
they panicked. Orlando won it back-to-back years, and everybody freaked out because Orlando had 1-in-66 odds.
And they got Shaq and they
crazy.
Got Penny Hardaway. But they didn't win them a championship. I mean, there's no real need to panic.
Well, my argument was like, was it a bad thing that Orlando got those two guys back to back? Like, they turned the C-Web pick into Penny Hardaway and three number ones.
No, people were pretty excited about it.
Yeah, and they made the finals in 2 years, and it was like an exciting team. Like, that's not bad. It's not
right.
A bad thing.
No, you're right, because these guys are going to go play in obscurity on a bad team and never get better and never be heard from again for the most part.
Yeah, like somebody like Ricky Rubio, who I think is going to be really, really good potentially on the right team. If he had, you know, somehow ended up on, let's say he went to the Suns just randomly.
Mm-hmm.
That would have been awesome. He could have learned from Steve Nash, been their third guard, like played on the right kind of team, grown at his own pace, learned from Grant Hill and Nash and some of the veterans that team has, learned how to get behind the wheel with a 0.14 blood alcohol from Jason Richardson. There's some things he could have learned. Instead he's probably, you know, potentially going to Memphis. Where he gets to play with O.J. Mayo.
He can just pass the ball to O.J. Mayo and watch him shoot.
Nice shot, O.J. Coming to you again. To me, that's the worst case there. Finally, you signed up for Twitter.
I did,
I convinced you.
Per your suggestion.
Jacko2323.
That's right. Follow
on Twitter.
Me or whatever. It's not fully set up yet because I can't really get it to work on my phone yet, so I'll have to play with the computer at home because it's blocked at work. But
and their search engine takes a couple of days, but I think it would be fun to have you do a little Twittering during Yankee games.
I will do that. Follow me on Twitter, sure.
I'm going to follow you on Twitter, Jacko.
All right, I'll see you all on Twitter.
All right, thanks, Johnny.
Thanks, buddy.
Talk to you next week.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you for downloading the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Too much fun.
Check out more podcasts at the iTunes Music Store or at Podcenter at ESPNRadio.com.
Peace out.